Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, and all those different places. And we're on the Simply G Celebrity segment on the Simply G Media Network, and I'm so excited to welcome the program. And even though it's our flagship station, I'm sorry, again, it's one of our big rivals, but the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, Jason Campbell. Jason, thanks for coming by to talk to us today.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Excited to talk to you. And when I kind of tried to look up and do research, I saw you've had a great career. You keep, you're always doing the very best. You did really good in college and continue your career in the NFL. But one thing I saw that's very important that keeps you going, especially with adversity, Jason, some of the teams you've been on that have not been winners and different things, that God is really an important part of your life. Can you share us when you first found God?
Yeah, as a kid, I grew up in a household where both parents, they're still married, been married for like 44 years, and, we was always involved in church growing up, and, as part of us as a youth, whether we was, working with them, or we start off in the choir, and then you go to the usher, and just different things we used to do growing up, and Dad always told me, like, during tough times, even during the good times, always keep your faith. And, God won't ever, he won't ever fail you. And, no matter what the circumstance look like, don't get caught up into the circumstances. Don't get caught up into, into how things look, but just have faith that they always have a way of working themselves out. And I just remember even in college, Brother Chet Williams, who's a team chaplain, he's still a team chaplain there now. He was outstanding during our FCAs, during the season. I think I learned more that year during the season about my teammates than any other year I ever played football. And the reason was we would get in a room, we're probably like a group of 15 or 20 guys, and, as many guys on the team could come if they want. And for an hour, it was nothing about football. It was just about getting to know the person, and the person in the room. And our talks was, where they come from and how they grew up, and you would be stunned about some of the things you hear about what your teammates had to get through and what they had to go through to get to where they're at, and how they try and change their lives, and how God is a big more part of their lives and everything. And for them, their testimony was, I'm only here because the way God brought me out of certain situations and put me in this uniform. And that year we locked arms and we went undefeated. 2004 Auburn, and a lot of that had to do with because we were such a brotherhood and we had such great faith. And our verse that year was always Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, all your ways acknowledge Him, and He'll direct your path. And that's how I feel in my pro career. I've had to go through a lot of adversity. A contract year in Oakland, having two solid years out there, and I ended up breaking my collarbone and being 14 screws put in, and you just feel like the end is there. And they end up trading for another quarterback, and you're just like, man, what else can go wrong?
Right.
And, you just find yourself now in a situation where, you go to Chicago, you get healthy, you're in Cleveland, you play a little bit last year. But I always understood that, football is my career, it's my job, but it's not my life. And like I said, the most important things in life, God, family, career, and then finance. So, it's just to be able to be where I'm at today, it's been a blessing, regardless of the adversity that I had to go through.
So I'm going to touch upon this Auburn experience. I watched the special on ESPN about Auburn and Alabama, the rivalry. It was amazing. And my wife was supposed to tape the rest of it, and I was like, because I couldn't get to watch all of it. And she said, I deleted it. I said, no. It was such an interesting story. And I was definitely rooting for you guys in so many ways because you see Auburn, they're the superstardom, and Alabama is, and then Auburn kind of is the redheaded stepchild in certain ways. So your faith and everything that happened to you that season, do you think that was a key point in going undefeated in certain ways, Jason?
Yeah, I think it was a huge point. Like I said, I understand the 2010 team went undefeated with Cam as well. But, you know, from talking to a lot of people there, they say it was just a sense of closeness that we had amongst all our guys. We had like 20-some seniors that year. But all our guys had went through so much together as far as adversity. And then we ended up having a lot of guys go pro off the team as well. But a lot of it had to do with, you know, our faith and our team, meetings that we had the Saturday before, the Friday night before the game, where we gathered into the room. And, you know, we talked about the things that God has done in our lives and how he's changed us and how he continues to work with us. You know, of course, none of us personally, we all have some mistakes and things we have to improve on, but guys are just pouring their hearts out to each other. So when you feel another brother pouring his heart out to you, you know, you kind of, you know, feel like, you know, like he's giving you his personal life, you know, like, and then you tell him about your personal life, you know, it's just like, it's a sense of trust there. And that all played into how the burst came about and all played about how we played that season. It's like every person trusts one another. And we always say iron sharpens iron. And so each player give you all and don't let each other down. And that's how we went through that whole season that year. And that's when we should not defeat it, because we felt like every time we touched the field, we could not be beat, because we had so much that was going with us that, we weren't afraid of anything.
And you shocked the world in so many ways because of that rivalry between Alabama, that Auburn, finally, national champions. You know what I mean? It must have been just amazing in the state of Alabama, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's always a huge rivalry. You always talk to people, some people that be married, their wife is from Alabama, or their husband's from Auburn, or reverse. But every time you turn around, they say they don't talk to each other that whole day. I was like, really? And there's always been, it's also been some scary moments too. Like, you've heard, things happen to kids or parents doing something to kids just because one of their teams lost or something.
Geez.
And they didn't take it well. And that's the sad part about the rivalry, because some people take it well too far. And, like the guy poisoning the trees at Auburn and everything like that. Like, that takes away from the game. It's a rival within itself, because it's an in-state rival. So I was like, but don't take it so far outside the game till you do something to kids, or you punish some people, or you're doing, stuff that doesn't have nothing to do with the game. Like, keep it a fun game. Understand what the rival is, what it is, but don't take the personal aspect towards anyone else.
Exactly. We're talking to Jason Campbell from the Cleveland Browns, and really enjoying the discussion about his faith and the story and Auburn, and then going and dealing with adversity, especially with the Raiders and the injury and the Raiders, and then ending up with Cleveland. And I think that, Jason, one thing you got to thank God for is a lot of NFL quarterbacks, have that situation happen to them, and then they end up never back on the field again. So they end up either retiring early or certain things. So you got to feel you're blessed in a way to keep your career going.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I always say I'll be going to my 10th season this year. And, it's a blessing to play that long, because the average NFL career is 3 years. And, you always hear about the guys that play a lot, and seem like, guys play a lot longer. But if you look at the average guys that come in and out of the NFL, it's really 2 to 3 years. And for me to be going to my 10th year, dealing with all the coaches I've had to go through, and then the different adversities for his injuries, dislocating my knee back in 2007, and then having a broken collarbone on my throwing shoulder. Like, that could have been career-ending itself. And, God has blessed me still to play even more years after that and everything. So sometimes you can sit back and say, what if, you had one coach your whole career, or one, two, but the other side of it is, you can look at it and be like, what a story, to go through all those injuries and those different coaches, and to be able to have a long career and not look back. Maybe it can be a story for some other kid that, just coming along, and just how he sees an adversity, it may just keep him, keep moving forward and not giving up and throwing in the towel. Because it's still, sometimes you feel like throwing in the towel, something good will happen. And you just gotta persevere and just keep fighting. And I'll tell all athletes, I said, guys don't make it to this level because they didn't go through any adversity.
Exactly.
They got to this level because they knew how to handle adversity.
Exactly.
Get through it and get through adversity.
Absolutely. And one thing that you look at your faith and the God's been with you, you definitely are about giving back, Jason. And honestly, if you Googled yourself and saw that stuff, you're a very humble person that doesn't share as much. I found an article, and that's how I found out. This is the premise of our interview. It's not going to be about football. It's going to be about something that's really important on my celebrity show, is talking about people that give back. So what happened, Jason, is basically in the off seasons, you do a lot of cool things to help out the community and do things. So tell us a little bit about how you give back to kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, I usually go back home. I'm at the Mississippi. I usually go around and I talk to high schools. I usually go around telling high schools, the kids about, education, staying in school, and then I go around and talk to a couple of high school teams, and I talk to some athletic banquets, about fighting adversity and about not quitting, not ever giving up, your dream. And I always tell people, a lot of folks can tell you what you can't do or what you can't achieve. If you listen to it, you allow that stuff to sink in and come true. But I always use it as motivation, to let it motivate me to be like, you don't determine my future. God does. Just because you say what I can't do doesn't mean I can't do it. I was like, because not everyone's for you. And that's why I always tell them, when you start to do things, you're going in the right direction, there's always so many people trying to pull you down. And the reason is, a lot of folks don't want to see you be successful or see you get ahead of them. I was like, so don't look at it that way. I said, look at it as something you want to do for yourself, and don't ever quit. So I do football camps in the summer, and they're free football camps. I team up with FCA down in Hattiesburg, Pineville. It's ran by my Mitch Williams, and he does an outstanding job. And what he does is he has kids that come in every year. It's called a quarterback club, and he'll have about 100-150 guys come in. They keep them over the whole weekend, and for that whole weekend, he'll have guest speakers come in and speak about their faith, speak about, how they was able to reach success in life or reach things that they wanted to achieve. And it's a skill, it's a faith camp and a skills camp, to the point where you're not talking about skills in football. You're talking about social skills and communication skills and choosing a friend, choosing the right friend to be around, the choices that you make and those type of things. So it's teaching them how to become men.
Yes.
And it's outstanding. It's outstanding. It's a fun weekend. And then like I said, with our team over there, we do a free football camp for kids. 2 years in a row, we've had over 400 kids to come out. And it has been a lot of fun because that's just a way of giving back. A lot of times people have these camps that get so expensive that kids can't afford to go to them. I don't want a kid back at home to have that. That's a reason for them not to be able to show up. And try to do something, learn something that may help them along the way, because I have other NFL guys that come and help work the camp as well. And we do the same thing that any of these other camps do across the nation. And we just want to bring it closer to them so they not just see us on TV, but they can touch us and feel us and actually hear us in person.
Well, Jason, a tremendous story of in the short time that we had you on the program. We definitely want to have you back again to maybe talk some football with us and some other stories of how you made it in the NFL and stories of Auburn. So I appreciate you being able to reach out to you and connect with you on LinkedIn and really learn about you. And I'm glad that our international audience will learn more about who Jason Campbell is. Is there a place to find information on you? Again, we show your humility. There's not a lot out there to find you except Wikipedia. Is there anything else that I was missing?
Not yet. I'm actually in the process of probably working with someone to start branding the things a little more. But other than that, I'm kind of a low-key guy, kind of just going along about my business and everything, and just try to do things to sort of help others and not looking for anything back. I just think that's just why we're here. We're here to share. We're here to help each other and help each other grow in life and whatever aspects that come our way.
Well, Jason, thanks for calling, and I hope that you'd like to come back again, talk some stories and stuff like that, and I enjoyed chatting with you, so thanks again for calling.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you, man.
All right, take care. All right, you're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network again, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Author's Corner is a lot of fun, especially when you put a mixture of a celebrity – and a New York Times bestselling author. Sometimes people say a celebrity is a New York Times bestselling author, but this guy definitely is a celebrity as well. So I want to welcome to the program Jeffrey Hazlett. He is the author of Running the Gauntlet. He's a New York Times bestselling author, Amazon bestselling author, and host of C-Suite on Bloomberg TV. Jeffrey, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for having me, and I really appreciate taking the time.
So it's really nice we can kind of use your interview for our celebrity show and our author show because of your expertise in both areas, for sure. So tell our audience a little bit about your background, especially about the TV show, and then we'll get right into the book.
Well, the TV show itself is about me going into the C-suite. You know, 99% of the people who actually work in a corporation never get to walk into the C-suite. That is, to go see all the officers of the company. The premise of my show is I see something we want to talk about, and then I go and talk to the entire C-suite, or I don't go see them. And I ask them some really hard questions about their business. What's going on? Why do they do something? You know, what was that bonehead move about? Or, you know, what is it you're doing that's right? And why? And what we can learn? And that's really what it's about. You know, I'm a former C-suite executive myself, a former chief marketing officer of Fortune 100 company, but I've also run small businesses. I've bought, you know, over 250 businesses in my career, and, you know, over $25 billion worth of transactions. So, but, you know, I know what it's like. I'm from South Dakota originally, and, you know what it's like to push a broom, clean a toilet, and at the same time run a big business.
And I think that that's so important, and I guess you learn through going up the ladder in life and saying to yourself, you know, learn what every job entails in your business, because you never know, and that's where I think what you're talking about is the ins and outs is where the mistakes are made in so many ways, Jeff.
Well, I mean, I was talking about that today on the show on Bloomberg this morning. We were talking about, you know, some of the Apple executives that have gone on to other companies and they haven't been very successful. And I was speaking to one particular, Ron Johnson, you know, I think is a really nice guy, but he went on and became the CEO of JCPenney. Well, you know, he never adapted to the culture of the company, nor did he do the things I think he needed to do. I mean, this is the guy that invented the Genius Bar. But he never brought any genius to JCPenney's. And here they were going down and going down. And I said, look, if it was James Cash Penny, that's his name, James Cash Penny, there's two things. One, he would be back in the back of the store in a cot making sure it worked. And this guy was living, you know, 1,000 miles away,
right,
and then commuting on the corporate plane. I mean, you can't do that. You need to, you know, go in and live and be a part of the people you're working with and show that you care. And I said that was a big, big mistake. And then just didn't understand the C in JCPenney. It's about cash. It's about coupons. It's about sales. It's about,
yes,
retail. And he just tried to do it a little differently. And I think people make, you know, I think people make bonehead moves, not because they want to, just because they don't think it through.
Yeah, they make the bonehead moves because they think they're going to go buy the book, but they don't look at common sense. Business is common sense. If you're not selling, you're doing something wrong. And I think that that's the premise of the book, Running the Gauntlet. And look, you have to look at making changes to make your business shine, because every business is not going to make billions. And if it's a startup, for sure, but even if it's a corporation, at times we have to reinvent ourselves. So I think that's so important, the premise of that book.
Yeah, I think, well, you always have to be reinventing yourself. I mean, and it's tough. I mean, I've owned, you know, printing businesses, a number of other businesses in my past, and I always like to set it up so we do it the same way every time. But by the time you set it up is when you should be breaking it. You know, what can you do to continually improve it? And that's really what it's about. Adapt, change, or die. There's really no other choice. And I mean, it's that simple from when we walked out of the primordial sea, you know, and we adapted and we changed, and then we became who we are today. And we're continuing to change. But businesses are the exact same way.
Oh, and that's so true. So here's the problem a lot of times is a lot of businesses are happy where they are, and the failure is that they don't make that change. Why is that? What do you think the reason is that people are not willing to make changes?
Well, in the book, I talk about five of them, but I think one of the biggest ones were just adverse to risk for the most part. Most people are afraid, you know, and what's the worst thing that's going to happen to you in business? If, you know, is you're not going to die. If you make a mistake, most people are going to die. Now, you know, if you're a heart surgeon, you're operating heavy machinery, it's a little different, guys. You know, pay attention. But by and large, most people in business, you make a mistake, no one's going to die. And most customers will forgive you of great sins if you're trying hard. And I just think you just have to wake up every morning. So that I just don't want to be stupid and go out and try to do the right things.
And do the right things. And so people are afraid of risk and a risk reward. And you kind of make that as analysis and through the process. And I guess talking to everyone in your company is an important thing before making a move, especially if you're a corporation with your board of directors and saying, well, or with your board and saying, you know, we might have to go this route. Is this the right thing to do before jumping to conclusions? Because a lot of times people just run and do something without any research involved.
I think the other piece of it you kind of hit on a second ago was with that risk, you know, there's reward, but let's create the tension. You know, there's an old saying in sports, no pain, no gain. We all know that. Then why are we adverse? And most corporations now are trying not to create tension. That's the one thing you should create. The tension that drives healthy debate. The healthy debate drives a better outcome. And it gets us talking about how we can do things better and the way in which we want to do it. So I want the tension between sales and marketing. I want the tension between sales and marketing and legal. And I want the tension between sales, marketing, and legal, and HR, and then finance, and then every single aspect of the company. Because the tension that you have, that creative tension, creates the kinds of things that are going to move your company.
And I like when we're looking at some of the points of the book. One is develop a takeover mentality. And I'm an entrepreneur, Jeff, but I mean, I'm a small business entrepreneur. But if I have that mentality in so many ways that I'm going to succeed, you have a lot of better opportunities of success. If you don't have that, well, this isn't going to work, and I go and try it, nine times out of ten, it's going to fail, right? You got to have that.
Exactly. And I love this. People say, well, we tried that before. Well, try it again, you know? So if it makes sense, it should work. Now, maybe the timing's off, the scale's off. I mean, maybe your message is off a little bit, but if it makes sense, why won't it work? So what do you got to do? You got to do something to get it right. And so you just keep working till you get it done. You can't make this hard. And we try to make things overly complicated sometimes when it really shouldn't be. And, you know, we're basically there to sell something that somebody wants, and we want to extract as much value to as many people as possible so that we can get richer. And that building wealth for our families is part of what we want to do.
We're talking to New York Times best-selling author, host of C-Suite on Bloomberg Television, Jeffrey Haislett. And it's really an interesting conversation about his book, Running the Gauntlet. And I think that through this conversation a lot of times, is it difficult, especially when you consult people and you talk to people, to say you have to have that mentality? You have to be willing to make a driving change in your business to have success. How many of them say, well, or they're the naysayers that already predict something's going to happen before it happens. And how do you kind of consult them in a way to say you should definitely do this?
Well, and there's two things. I don't think you can consult them to do it unless they want to. That's
right.
One. And then, but in the front of my book, I actually put to the naysayers, opportunists, obstructionists, who stand in the way of driving progress and change in a core organization, note, we will beat you, because there's a special breed of people who do drive this. And, you know, when I sell services to other companies to consult to them outside of my books and the television show, I tell people I only work with high-growth companies. If someone has to ask me what a high-growth company is, I know that they don't know, and I don't want to work with them. And then, or they spend the next half hour telling me why they're a high-growth company, which convinces them they want to work with me. So, you know, you really got to figure out what your value proposition is and throw it out there and be able to be very clear. But my opinion is that, you know, it's a special breed of people who are high-growth. That's why you only see so many of them.
Right, exactly. So there's a certain mentality that you talked about, the takeover mentality. But as an entrepreneur to an entrepreneur, Jeff, is it, we have this thought process that, you know what, the risk involved, we see so many small businesses fail. And this is where I think they need to definitely pick up this book, especially if they're an entrepreneur that's struggling or is running a business in some sort of aspect and just really doesn't want to take the bull by the horns. And they're not willing to try different things. What makes us tick in a way to say, you know what, we enjoy this, we enjoy the everyday craziness, but we have a plan and action, and to kind of...
Well, that's really what an entrepreneur is, and typically, you know, entrepreneurs go through three distinct stages. They always have them. You know, you start off as a one-man band, then you add these developed followers, and then you start to add the skilled technicians and professionals that you need in your business as you grow it and scale it. But you really don't know that it can't be done, and you won't accept anything other than it will get done. And it might take you more time. You know, it's like I wanted to be a host of my own television show, and I said, I'm going to go do it. Well, you know, it took me 3 years. Okay, well, yeah. I really wanted it in the first 2 days. Well, so it just took me a little longer, but I knew I was going to get it, and I was going to get it on my terms. And I just never stopped until I did it. And so, and that's what, you know, that's what a real entrepreneur does. They just know this is what we're going to get, and I'm not settling for anything less than that perfection.
And that's the great thing when you said the perfection. You set these goals for yourself, and you want to make that driving change, and you have that vision to do it. You got to go out and do it. You know how many people, and I consult with businesses as well, and interview tons of people. Oh, well, I'm going to do this, and I have a great plan. They have the plan to do it, Jeff, but they don't deliver. And I think that's where...
I see that a lot with speakers and authors, quite frankly, who want the fame and fortune but don't want to do the things that you have to. So a lot of people are in what I call the story of the things that they want, but never into the doing of the things that they want. And there's a big difference between the story and doing. And those that do, and there are a number of us that do, you know, we become the stories themselves, the success stories. But those people are all about wanting it, and they just never will do the things you need to do to get it.
Well, how do you stay organized in that way to make sure that you do make that driving change? And I'm sure you talk about this in this book, but having someone as successful yourself on this show, that it's not just an author doing it. You do it firsthand in your business, everyday life.
Well, I think it comes through, and I'm glad. That's a great question. I thank you for asking. I think it's because it's authentic, and you can tell people who are authentic. I mean, that's what a brand is, nothing but a promise delivered. And I think that comes through. I think it certainly comes through in my show because people constantly, I get hundreds of comments a day where people say, Jeff, love the way you keep it real. Because, you know, when someone's telling me that they don't care about the money and here they are the CEO of a multinational corporation, I go, well, everyone that's listening to you is saying BS, BS. Because you do care about the money. That's how we keep score, you know. And I won't let them, you know, get away from that until I get that answer. So, you know, I think it's about being authentic and being real, and that comes through. And if you do that, you don't have to fake it, do you?
And do you see a lot of times that hands-on is an important part of this process as well? You can't.
Well, I mean, for me it is, but you know, for others, there are others that are really good delegators and let people go out and do the things that they can do. It doesn't mean you can't be hands-on in terms of checking in and doing different things, just different levels of it. Doesn't mean you have to get down and wash the floors, but you can make sure you got good people who get it done for you.
So if you're a small business right now, just afloat, and I'm thinking of this because you know how many people out here say, you're like E.F. Hutton in a way, Jeff, on this show right now. They want to hear this advice. What advice would you offer them?
Well, figure out what it is you want to do and let's go do it. But, you know, understand the balance. I call this conditions of satisfaction. You know, for my own personal well-being, I have three of them. And whenever I have violated them, you know, or cheated on them, I'm not happy. So there's three things for me. One, I want to build wealth for me and my family. Two, I want to have fun. And three, I want to grow professionally. Seriously, that's really the three simple rules I have for myself when it comes to doing things in business. And whenever I've taken a client for the money, but I really didn't like them, I never had fun. You know, whenever I was in a company and I wasn't growing and right. It was just, you know, checking it off and going in there and basically saying, yeah, I'm going to get out of here till 8. You know, who wants to do that? You know, I want to be there till 10, 11 o'clock at night. I want to be doing it 24 hours a day, you know, 7 days a week. That I want to do it for free, basically. But I do want to get paid because that is how we keep score. But my wife has said that a couple times. She said, you do this for free. And she's right. But let's don't tell anybody that.
And that's, I would say the same thing. It doesn't feel like work when you love doing, being an entrepreneur. If you're a true entrepreneur, you say, I don't want to go work for anyone else. I want to be able to keep growing and going to the next level. Amazing things. You're a fantastic teacher, Jeff. That's why I see you were really good with a TV show as well. I think that teachers are great as also celebrities and presenters.
Well, I appreciate it.
Because that's...
Well, and I think the thing you mentioned about me, which I think a lot of good people do, is that you do. I'm a doer, so I get it done. So I'm not afraid to do the things I do, and we all, even in my own office today, you know, a small business that we have, even though we run a multi-million-dollar business with television and books and speaking and consulting and PR, and then now our CEO and our C-suite network, you know, we all do jobs. I mean, I clean the toilets. That's one of the things I want, because I want people to say, if he can clean the bathroom, I can help, you know, clean up around here. I can help take out the garbage, or I can do this or do that. And I think those are important lessons for people to see.
Well, leaders serve, Jeff. And if you're a leader and you're not serving and you're not doing leading by example, you're not going to have a successful business. So that's very, very important. So, Jeff, where can we find information on you, purchase your book, and learn more about you?
I'm everywhere. Just Google me. But it's Hazlett.com, HAYZLETT.com. Jeffrey Hazlett. Look up the C-Suite on Bloomberg. You'll find me there. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. You email me, and I'll get back to you. You can find me on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, everywhere.
Well, I hope we can continue this conversation and create a good friendship, because I see you as a definite person I need to talk to, a great mentor, and I just learned about you today, so I'm going to make sure I get watch Bloomberg TV and watch you and definitely get the chance to read your book. So thanks again for calling, Jeff.
And with a face like this, it deserves to be on television. Everybody should be watching.
All right, well, take care, Jeff. Good talking to you, man.
All right. All right,
bye. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley on the Simply G Media Network, powered by Simply G Radio. And I'm so excited to welcome the program. And this is, I guess, the one only celebrity that I kind of devote a monthly segment to. We've been getting so busy with such all-star cast, but when I talk about somebody who gives back to the community, that is doing such great things and is really providing a great platform for many, many people and speaking out against the people that really don't have a voice, Kat tries to give that voice to people. So I'm welcome to the program, Celebrity Kat Kramer. Kat, how are you?
I'm wonderful. It's great to talk to you. It's been too long.
It has, 2 months, and it's amazing. We think that, you know, we'll make it a January one, right? You know, and then January's crazy, and we're almost out of February. It's just amazing how quickly we'll be at to the point where we first met in L.A. in March a year ago.
Can you believe it? Yeah, and the Academy Awards is coming up next week.
So I know.
Really a busy time here.
Oh, it must be awesome. I mean, to be able to be at all these different events and different things, and to be there, and especially how everyone knows about your father and the centennial. I'm sure that there's a buzz every different awards ceremony you go to, right? People are talking.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we just gave the Stanley Kramer Award last month to Fruitvale Station. And we really were so happy because the movie, we think, you know, it definitely didn't get recognized by the Academy. So we were happy to be able to honor it. It was a really special moment. And then, of course, you know, we had the Golden Globes, and they did a big article about me having been a former Miss Golden Globe that appeared like a week before. And it's just a really, you know, exciting time because there's just so many great movies this year, and the races are really tight. But we were happy to be able to, you know, turn the spotlight on that film because the filmmaker, Ryan Coogler, I think is the youngest to receive the Stanley Kramer Award. It was also accepted by Forrest Whitaker, who executive produced. And, you know, Ryan, not only is the subject very current, but the way he raised money for the film outside the system and literally from, you know, investors from across the country and non-industry connections that just believed in what he was doing. That's exactly how my father started his career. So he's really following in my dad's footsteps with that film.
Well, absolutely. And I think through the centennial, when you're talking about, you know, different award ceremonies, different things, but getting to go to where, I guess, really your father really believed in, and those are those film festivals, going to the different film festivals to honor your father in so many ways, traveling all over the country when Kat's used to staying in California. That must have been a different type of thing you've been doing in the last couple months as well, right?
Yeah, we went to Kentucky for the first ever Pioneer Award, which is an annual award the Louisville Film Festival that Conrad Bachman established. We gave Sharon Stone the first Stanley Kramer Social Artist Award at the Catalina International Film Festival, and we're going to be giving that award again in September. We just haven't announced the recipient yet. And then we had the Mad World anniversary, the actual 50th anniversary at the Dome, at the Cinerama Dome, which is where my father, you know, he had the Dome built for that film, but we had the official, there were several screenings of it last year, but that was the official anniversary screening. And then we had the first ever Stanley Kramer Film Festival in Palm Springs, which is annual. It's every November. We're actually working on that now. And then then right before that, I had the fifth anniversary of Kat Kramer's Films That Changed the World with the U.S. premiere of Fallout, which is still going strong. It opened in Paris this month, and we have a lot of plans still for the film. And it featured my dad making On the Beach in Melbourne. And I actually just did another radio program just last week for KPFK for their pledge drive, and we had Fallout as part of the giveaway. And I was so lucky that Dr. Helen Caldicott, who was the keynote speaker at Fallout premiere, that she, you know, we were able to reach her in Sydney, Australia, and she was on the phone for 30 minutes. And the whole topic of the hour was like fierce females changing the world. So we had Sandra Bernhard, who was plugging her new show, which she just did at Royce Hall that I saw last week. She was in the studio as a special guest. And, yeah, it's the film Fallout is so topical right now. And so we're just doing everything we can to make sure that people see it. And it will be opening in the States. I just don't have a release date yet. But we really had the pretty much, I would say, more like the world premiere. I mean, it had already debuted in Australia, but no place else. So no one had seen it anywhere except Australia. So it was great.
And how has the response been in other countries about the film and stuff?
Well, it has European distribution, but it's just now slowly being distributed. And, you know, I mean, there was another film that was like the opposite point of view, which I never saw, but Lily Tomlin, who had introduced Helen that night, and also Helen and a lot of the other anti-nuclear activists had seen the film, Pandora's False Promise. And that's a movie that takes the opposing point of view. So, and several people said I should see it. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. But, we really are at a real scary time right now in the world, very much like when On the Beach premiered. And so that's why I think Fallout is so important, because it really, you know, will wake people up who are not aware of the dangers of nuclear, you know, war. And we really have to face the fact that we're still in a very vulnerable position.
It's kind of like you think about the arms race in the especially with the Cold War and the fear that was going on, but now people that are getting nuclear weapons are not just major countries that, you know, are playing this game of chess. They're ones that, you know what, they could care less what happens to human life in so many ways. And that's, so now people are getting their hands on this, that could be a terrorist, could be specific somebody who just wants to make a point, and then that's really something to be scared about, for sure. And I'm glad you're bringing that out, because you just we forget about it. We think, oh, Cold War's over, we don't have to worry about this anymore.
No, and I'm hoping to bring it to Palm Springs, actually, for something there. In fact, in the new issue of Going Organic magazine, the creator of that magazine, publisher Estelle Foster, had attended Fallout, because she knows a lot about that, obviously, and the environment. But she knows all about, you know, the effects of Fukushima. And she gave me, luckily, I was so honored to get Making a Positive Difference Award. It's in the current winter issue. So she's going to be there March 22nd in Palm Springs, where what I'm really excited about, and it's kind of like an anniversary of sorts, is, my father received the very first star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, March 28th, 1960, I think was the exact date. It was the first, completed star when they first started completing them and having ceremonies. He was the very first one, way early in the beginning. And now he's getting the very first for him. It's not the first. I mean, it's just it's a big honor because he hasn't had a star or anything since 1960 in Palm Springs on their Walk of Stars on March 22nd. So it's almost like to the date, 50-something plus years later. And it's going to be at Azul Tapas Lounge, which is a very famous restaurant and club right there in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on North Palm Canyon Drive. And his star will be right next to Carol Channing. We're going to have a star-studded ceremony and a lot of surprises. And I'm going to be doing like a little sneak preview of my show, probably, you know, with some other special things geared towards the ceremony. So I don't really want to give it away, but I will be doing something there on the stage at the after party.
Is that date set for Palm Springs?
Actually, it's March 22nd. And I think that I can be safe to say, unless the time changes, that the ceremony's at 1 in the afternoon, and it's and then followed by the after party right there all at Azul. And like I said, they've had several star ceremonies there. They just had one for Gavin McLeod a few weeks ago, but they don't usually do posthumous ones. And having just come off the Stanley Kramer Film Festival, I think this will be really, you know, a special ceremony for them. And of course, Lily is playing the McCallum, one of her favorite venues and my favorite venues, in Palm Springs, the McCallum Theater, the night before. So, and that's a very special weekend. And then Liza Minnelli is actually playing a casino, I've forgotten the exact name of it, on the 22nd, the night of the star. So that's a very hot weekend, and, both Lily and Liza have been mentors to me, and my father made two films with the late Judy Garland. So Liza's kind of a part of my family history as well.
Yeah, and you've not mentioned the whole family history with Liza. Tell us about that a bit.
Oh, it's a great story because my father gave Judy Garland, when she was actually having problems, in her career, getting the right roles and trying to make a comeback, really towards the end of her career, he gave her a real comeback role in Judgment at Nuremberg, where she was nominated for an Academy Award. And then she starred for him just, very shortly after that in a very, very movie that's special to my heart because it focuses on, children with disabilities, and that's A Child is Waiting, which we actually had a screening of that before the Stanley Kramer Centennial at UCLA. It was I wouldn't say kickoff, but it was just one of his earlier films, more obscure movies that they showed. Not an earlier film, but early in the year we had that screening there before they did the big tribute, back August and September of last year. So, and he used real mentally challenged kids in that. It's a very, very popular film among differently abled actors, but also just people in general that know the movie. And I think it should be screened a lot more, even be remade, actually. It's a really great movie. So Liza kind of mentored me when I was actually growing up in Seattle, Washington.
Oh.
And I performed for her, and I had I was very passionate and very, I had absolutely no nerve. I just kind of went after what I wanted. So she saw that spark in me, and she, when I was still I think I was 11 years old, growing up in Seattle, Washington, she flew me back down to L.A. to meet her mentor, Charles Aznavour, and we went to one of his concerts. And then I studied in New York with the late Herbert Berghoff, and she was kind of overseeing that. She had studied with him a whole summer, and, she was just very instrumental in kind of my direction when I was growing up. And Lily's been, more instrumental in my current career path. So it's kind of great to have both ladies there at the same time when we're giving the special award in my dad's honor.
Well, absolutely. You have two talented people that are your mentors, especially looking at, and we've been talking about this since we've been doing our monthly or every other month interviews, depending on how busy we are, about the one-woman show. And I know mm-hmm. that you constantly have kept it under in wraps in certain ways and different things and the process. So I know you've been practicing a lot and preparing a lot since the last time we talked as well, right?
Yeah, it's evolving, you know, but it's definitely going to be different than anything I've ever done, and I'm hoping that people will really respond to it because I think it does have a universal message. And there's, I will just say there's two brilliant parodies in the show written by Shelley Goldstein, and, well, the theme of the whole show is very specific, and it's kind of a parody in itself, but I really don't want to give it away. I really want people to be able to experience it.
Absolutely.
Just that it is a theater piece more than just a club act, for sure.
And how much did you take from specific people that you for the show? Like, I mean, through your process as a performer, seeing when you talked about Lily, you talked about Liza, different people, who would you say, like, other people that you kind of emulate in the show in certain
aspects? There's so many. I mean, it's, well, I have a, I will say that there's a new character in there that's paying homage to my godmother, Katherine Hepburn, and she's a very integral character in the show, that's all I'll say. So, you know, she makes an appearance. But I've been influenced by everyone from Bette Midler to, Judy Garland to, I mean, there's just so many musical performers and comedians and solo performance artists. I've kind of, you know, just been studying the greats and kind of just come up with my own. It's very original. I mean, it's very specific to myself. So I can't say I haven't been influenced by them all.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And very much by Lily and her early variety shows and just even, you know, having known her and worked with her, what I've seen her do recently has been made a huge impact on just, you know, my process and how I want to, the messages I want to send and the path I want to take, basically.
Well, absolutely. And Kat, that's, again, you're so excited about this. And when we finally find out when you're going to be performing and different things, we'll hear it first, I'm sure, on the show about different things. And I always know when we talk, there's different developments that are in the works and different processes. So what else is going on with Kat Kramer that people can kind of put on their calendars and can't wait to hear about what's going on? And
there's a couple film projects. I'm just really going to be honing the show. You know, there's going to be some, I will do another Kat Kramer's Films That Changed the World for sure this year. I already know the film, and I was trying to find the right date, and you know, everything revolves around the celebrity host and activist, and when it works for the filmmaker and all that. And I have to say that, you know, we just lost two incredible performers that were a big part of my father's legacy, the first one being Maximilian Schell, who passed away this month, and also Sid Caesar. I just wrote up a little remembrance about Max exclusively for the Toluca Times in their like Hollywood issue. And I think we're going to be having some more screenings of Judgment at Nuremberg. It was just recently selected by the Library of Congress for the National Film Registry. So that just happened a couple months ago. And he passed away. It was kind of a shock. Earlier this month. And then Sid, that, you know, was kind of expected because he was 91 and he had been ill for a while. But I just attended his funeral just a few days ago, actually, and it was very historical. It was very moving. It was more like a memorial besides being a traditional funeral. And a lot of greats were there and his family, and it was, you know, I was just honored to be there, to be a part of it.
Absolutely, and
you know, he's so known for It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. That's probably his biggest film credit. And he's also in my favorite movie, Grease. So, you know, and he was certainly a pioneer. And besides Spencer Tracy, you know, Mad World is an ensemble piece, but he and Milton Berle kind of lead the pack, I would say. And, you know, it just came out last month, the Criterion Collection just released a big anniversary edition Blu-ray with all these special features, and it's number one on Amazon in the comedy genre. It's gotten nothing but rave reviews. And, you know, it's just ironic that Jonathan Winters passed away last year,
right,
which was the official anniversary, and then it passed away like just literally within a few weeks of it coming out on Criterion. And all the fans just love the Criterion collection. They, you know, the, it's a big thing amongst film buffs and especially Mad World fanatics.
With your father's centennial, how has been the response, specifically the fans coming out, especially to the different festivals and different things, and the feedback you're getting constantly through email and different events talking about it? It's just like, it just, you can't believe
how... Oh, just so much. We have so many offers to remake my father's films, new twists on them, new, you know, they want to do other screenings across the country of different movies. I introduced them... special screening of It's a Mad World at the Arrow Theater. I think it was like over the summer, just last year, and it was completely sold out and packed, like from the balcony, and you couldn't even find a seat anyplace. So there was just like no, for whatever reason, when that film is playing anyplace, it's usually just completely sold out and of all ages. And, you know, we had it in Palm Springs, because a lot of it was filmed in Palm Springs, which is going to make the star down there even more special, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely. So how has other activism you've been talking about? I remember in a lot of the shows we've had, we've talked about the interviews. We've talked about specifically enough bullying and how, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get teacher children well into the schools. In fact, we have some interest right now from a couple of middle schools in L.A., and we're just waiting to see what's going to happen. And I would like to plan something special around that, because I, you know, I don't want that movie to be overlooked. And, you know, the bullying is just a terrible crisis. You hear about it, then it kind of dies down, but it's always going on. It's just something we have to deal with on a daily basis. And then, you know, there's all different forms of bullying. So, like adult bullying in the workplace is still another issue I really need to focus on spreading the word about. Because I've experienced it in so many of my colleagues, and, you know, it starts at school, basically, and then it works its way into adulthood.
Yeah, it continues, especially when the boss bullies the rest of the staff, or a certain supervisor or specific situation. I mean, look at it just in the NFL alone with the Miami Dolphins and the bullying case there. These are things that it just doesn't happen in schools. But I think
it's in the animal world. I mean, it's they just had that incident where they. You know, they literally murdered a giraffe and everything. It's just, I get too upset even talking about it. But I'm still, you know, really advocating for the elephants and for any animal. We just had a screening of Blessed Beasts and Children recently at the Filmmakers Gallery in Long Beach when, you know, they had my dad's memorabilia on display. And it was just amazing watching that early animal rights movie and knowing that this is the 30th anniversary of PAWS. And they have a lot of wonderful... events and activities coming up year-round to celebrate the 30th, and I'll be involved with some things they're doing, you know, in November. And there's also, I have a lot of ideas and plans around still getting Blessed the Beast and Children as an international single. So that's also one of my main focuses this year, and that's really in the works.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to look at all the activism, different things. I know that we talked about also the concerns you have with gun control as well as another big one we talked about with Colorado, but it just continues, doesn't it, Kat? It just doesn't end. We just hear about...
Especially now, there's just so much controversy about everything. The more that any issue makes progress, the more that they're going to fight against it. So I think we're really in a transition in that sense. But there's so many anti-bullying groups and laws, and they're really trying in the schools now. I mean, I'm just so pleased to see, because especially with Teach Your Children Well, there was so much resistance on that film, especially because it's, you know, LGBT bullying, but now's the time that movie really needs to be embraced, you know, on an international level. Because bullying is not just in the United States, it's also... the world. I think we just hear about it here, but it's happening, you know, in schools everywhere, pretty much.
And definitely, and you see that as a mission of yours, and especially when the situation with the school districts, and are they doing enough, and are they doing what's needed, and the constant work, constantly going at and saying this is not a good thing that's happening, and what defining what bullying is, and it's so many different things, and as long as people still believe it's not as bad as it is, more and more kids are going to be hurt, more and more kids are going to commit suicide. That's another big thing, Kat, that these kids that are bullied, some of them commit suicide. And
that's the whole thing with Teach Your Children Well was about.
Exactly.
Is about are the two, well, they used to say bully sides, but they've changed that title now just to suicide, because I guess there were some issues with it. But it's all about the two suicides of the teens that kick off the whole epidemic, basically. You know, because, I mean, bullying is still increased by the cyberbullying. But there's too many ways now that the parents and the teachers can stop it.
Yeah.
And the students have all been, you know, a lot of them have been taking action and, you know, being involved with anti-bullying groups and really standing up. So I think we just need to see that more.
From my studies, Kat, especially across the country involving bullying, there are still groups out there that want to kind of let it be that nothing's going on, nothing's wrong, there's not a problem, bullying is not increased, cyberbullying is not increased, and that suicides have not increased. And it's just it's an absolute terrible thing. As long we have to keep speaking out against this, because this process, everyone is going to try to kind of keep it quiet again, say everything's fine, and just allow kids to be abused and tortured and fearful of going to school every day. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah, it's still going on, and a lot of the teachers are the ones and the administrators that have been afraid and they're cowardly to do anything about it. But I mean, I'm hoping if it gets screened in these schools, which I told you have had major resistance, you know, especially, you know, if you try and screen it for younger students, it really is more for the parents and the teachers at this point to look at it. But I think it should be for, you know, everybody to see, not just parents and the teachers, because it's happening to the students, and they also need to be aware of it and take action. But there is a lot of resistance because it's LGBT based, and, you know, there is a lot of homophobia, and they just haven't embraced having it be part of the regular curriculum. But it really needs to be the leading, if not the leading film on LGBT bullying, I think it should be the leading film on bullying in general. Because the best thing about Teach Your Children Well is not just that Lily narrates it and that Coco Peru's in it and Wendy Walsh, that's the only interview she ever did and will ever do, and all those, you know, administrators and heads of organizations, because the film really looks for a solution. Where Bully was, you know, great, it had a narrative of different, following different students on their course with their experiences of being bullied and how, you know, each one handled it. It still didn't offer a solution. Like Teach Your Children Well is more educational in that sense. It's really a tool. And there is no other film that comes close to, you know, being specific in how to stop it. So that's really, I mean, there are a lot of other movies, but that's the one I'm passionate about, making sure that it gets into the schools and even the churches, and I think it should still get distribution.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no reason why it can't.
Exactly. So, Kat, anything else you can give us, any new updates, or we're going to have to wait? There's stuff still developing that you're not able to tell me yet, right?
Yeah, I'll be announcing some of my show dates coming up. And, you know, I'm also going to be doing some appearances and other charity things. And so we will have to hold tight till those are announced.
You can tell us that in March, right? March is going to be huge, isn't it? Definitely.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a very big month.
Yeah, it definitely always is. I think what happens is that the awards kind of slow things down a bit, and then everything starts to develop after pilot season's over and the award season, right? That's when things...
Yeah, and there's so many movies I'm behind, so, you know, I just want to hope that they get recognized. And the award season has been very, very busy this year, just really, and stretched out a lot, because the Oscars are not till March 2nd.
And they're normal.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So they're normally earlier, the Oscars?
They had been recently been doing them in February, but they were always in, like, early March, so I think they decided to go back to that.
I got it. So it's stretched.
But I just think it's unfortunate that certain movies were overlooked. But, you know, there's a lot of movies that I'm behind. I mean, obviously, I'm a very big fan of David O. Russell, and I love American Hustle. I love all of his work. You know, I just really, there were so many great movies in the Best Picture category. But the movie that I'm also really behind is the documentary 20 Feet from Stardom. What's interesting is, you know, it's all about the backup singers, and Mick Jagger is featured a lot because they have two of his key backup singers are the stars of the film. I just went to an event the other night where two of them sang, and I am very fortunate to be able to say I know Mary Clayton, who's had her own amazing career, but she was the original duet with Mick on Gimme Shelter, and she tells that story. And, you know, a little bit of that kind of, in my show, my duet with Mick, the spirit of that movie, let's just say, without giving too much away, the spirit of what it represents